Blog Talk Radio.
And I won't be made to ever feel ashamed that I'm American made.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Assignment America Radio Show. I'm your host, Betty Kilbride. Washington, D.C. had a complete 100% flip this weekend. John Boehner, representative from Ohio, Speaker of the House, who's under a lot of pressure from not only people within Washington, D.C., but also throughout the entire country, resigned on Friday. Historical moment. Because honestly, whether you realize it or not, and I know a lot of people are going to freak out and say, oh my God, I can't believe she just said that. Well, I'm going to say it. Whoever it is that has that holds the position of Speaker of the House should get a medal for enduring the BS, not only of its own party, regardless of which side of the aisle they are, having to deal with their own party, at the same time deal with other representatives on the Hill, both in Congress and Senate, have to deal with thousands upon thousands of lobbyists trying to come in and persuade them to do this or that, and then on top of that, to have people throughout the country flooding the gates of the switchboard system, demanding that they be heard. It's a tremendous pressure. It is an outstanding amount of time, effort, and it takes a toll on you. People have been saying since Friday, oh, you know, he's probably leaving. We're probably going to hear that he's got cancer or some kind of medical problem, you know, and that's the reason why. Or something's going on in his family, and that's the reason why. No, that's not the reason why he resigned. The reason why he resigned is, unless you realize it or not, other representatives within his own party, the Republican Party, quietly wound up signing on to a demand for his resignation. Let me tell you what's going to happen. Let me give you a quick, fast little caveat here as to what's going to happen. Those representatives who turned on their own Speaker of the House have all now been put on a list. Don't do anything for them. Because they basically have turned into a turncoat in Capitol Hill. Now, everybody throughout America is saying, oh, my God, this is so great. Oh, we won. We won. I've been watching it all over social media all weekend. Oh, I'm going to throw back a few beers. Let's have a party. Boehner finally wound up resigning. Oh, the ramifications that are going to happen. Right now, actually it happened on Friday, as soon as he wound up announcing, Washington, D.C. went into a terminal flux, 100%. Papers were flying. People became insecure, not sure what was going to happen with their job. Now, you have to remember, ladies and gentlemen, people on the Hill who work for various representatives within the Republican Party, those people all have rent to pay. They all have student loans to pay off. They have children to support. They have households to support. Every one of them now are scrambling because they don't know if whether or not they're going to have a job soon because of the way the Republican Party is eating its own. Not to mention the fact that the staffers in Boehner's office didn't know until he announced that he was resigning that they were going to be out of a job come the end of October. These are individuals that have been working 16, 18, 20 hours a day since he became Speaker. Haven't had a day off. And if they did have a day off, they were busy doing work for the speaker. You know, I'm not defending him, ladies and gentlemen. So don't get your knickers in a twist saying, oh, my God, she's a rhino. We're going to get into the terminology of rhino shortly. I don't hold a political affiliation with either side of the aisle. I'm an American. I don't hold a political party after my name. I learned a long time ago that there are issues that I like, there are issues I don't like. I refuse to be pigeonholed into one side or the other. I'm a practicalist. I deal in reality, I deal in real issues. I look at the issues based on how it is going to affect the nation as a whole. Not just my happy little ass. And how is it going to deal with just me? Been asked questions all weekend. You know, in fact, here's one of them from David. You know, with your experience, you know, how do you change D.C.? Well, we're going to get into that, too, during this hour. Going to make it very quickly. Everybody and their cousin saying, oh, Trey Gowdy's got to be the next Speaker of the House. Well, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? I know for a fact Trey Gowdy is not even going to consider it, because right now Trey Gowdy is more interested, because he's in the middle of the Benghazi investigation with Hillary Clinton. He doesn't want to be sidetracked. So stop with this, oh, Trey Gowdy's going to be, because guess what? There is a little bit of a hierarchy, you know, within Congress. As to who's the next one up for speaker, it goes by length of time in office, what, you know, what committees they're on. There is a procedure in picking the next Speaker of the House. So for all of you armchair and laptop or keyboard political strategists, step away, back up, take a breath. In fact, take about 1,000 breaths, because you don't have a clue of what's happening on Washington, D.C., because the majority of you, and I'm going to piss you off right now, majority of you have never been to this city. Majority of you have no clue how the government actually works. The only reason why you're jumping on the bandwagon is because everybody else on your Facebook and social media accounts are all jumping on the bandwagon. Well, guess what? Step away, educate yourself before you make a fool out of yourself, because a few people did that this weekend. You know, I threw out a caveat on Friday, right after I learned about John Boehner's resignation. And what's really interesting is the response that I got, you know, and then the subsequent ramifications thereafter. It truly is hysterical to see people go crazy. You know, my first response was, you know, I posted up an article, John Boehner, House Speaker, will resign from Congress, you know, by the New York Times. And I said, very interesting turn of events. The Democrats just won a huge political point with this resignation. Oh, my God. The responses I got were, how can you say that? You know, Democrats winning, are you crazy? Well, yeah, okay. Then after that, I finally got fed up. You know, it was maybe, you know, about an hour after the fact. I sat back and I said, all right, no emotions. I don't run on emotions, ladies and gentlemen. I run on facts. I run on history. This is what I posted up right after it. Before anyone gets their knickers in a twist about my previous post regarding Boehner's resignation, let me give you a history lesson. For the last time, a Speaker of the House was forced to resign, and the consequences that followed. The year was 1989 when Jim Wright, Democrat from Texas, was targeted by good old Newt Gingrich and his ilk. Wright was forced to resign over the Keating incident. And I want every one of you, ladies and gentlemen, who are listening to this show, live or in the podcast after the fact, go look up the Keating 5 scandal. Very interesting read. But I'll give it to you quick, fast, in a nutshell. Four Democrats and one representative were involved. One of them is still in office, John McCain. After Wright resigned, we got Tom Foley as Speaker of the House. Now, Foley was a good man. He was a dedicated servant of the American people, but he was also a very shrewd lawyer. Everybody wants the law, wants term limits for elected officials in the, on both sides of the aisle. Well, guess what? You can't get it, Bob, because Foley brought a lawsuit regarding this very topic, calling it unconstitutional, and his case won in front of the Supreme Court out in Washington State. Now, this had to do with congressional and senatorial term limits. Now, there is a case on the books. I'm going to interrupt myself here. There is a case on the books about the president having term limits. Congress set in motion two terms. That's it. And the reason why they did that historically was because of the fact that Franklin Delano Roosevelt pretty much moved into the White House and decided never to move out until he died. Excuse me. I got a little tickle in the back of my throat. Well, it turns out that that is a congressional piece. Congress made a law that the presidency can only have two terms. That's it. Full 100% vote. I think there were only a few people that actually voted against it back then. But Congress has to wind up bringing the vote forward. Many people tried to bring the vote forward of term limits in Congress and Senate. Tom Foley prevented that, saying it was unconstitutional because somebody should be able to wind up representing their country, their district, their state, their locale, should they wish to continue. Unfortunately, that's a detriment to the country, but I digress. Anyway, so therefore, once he got the unconstitutional calling in the Supreme Court, we can now thank Newt for handing us that lovely law on a silver platter. Then we have Newt Gingrich himself. And I know somebody's going to turn around and say, oh, my God, we're going to sue her, you know, because she's defaming Newt Gingrich. Who gives a crap? Go ahead and sue me. I ain't got nothing for you to sue me for. He handed us that lovely law on a silver platter because of the fact he set into motion when he went after Jim Wright. Well, guess what? 1998, Newt was hit with over 84 ethics violations as speaker, not to mention backroom deals, personal vendettas, because let me tell you something, that man was all about personal vendettas. You pissed him off and he came after you no matter what, and so many more other problems. He was basically run out of D.C. People now want Newt to run for president? Give me a break. Find out more about that man before you go promoting him and thinking that, hey, guess what? We need to have him. No, we don't. You'll understand why he was run out of D.C. in 1998 if you do your real homework on him. And stop wearing your blinders. And then I continued on and said, so before you go passing judgment on me for my statement that this resignation is a win for the Democrats, learn the history of how Washington, D.C. works and the consequences of these types of situations. Every elected official begins their career as what I call guppies. But after they enter the big old fishbowl that we call Washington, D.C., they have to sell their soul in order to stay afloat in the murky waters, murky, shallow waters of Washington, D.C., because that's what it is, shallow. If they survive the murky, shallow waters and don't get eaten by the big fish and the sharks, you know, the old political horses who never leave the hill, they might make it into the deeper waters where they get, or they will get, swallowed up by the whales that I call the lobbyists. That's what I posted out. Oh, my God, you think I had just created a shitestorm? My God. You know, why does everyone have to drink evil in Washington, D.C., is what one person said. And my response? Because they have sold their soul to stay in office. Lobbyists, special interests, and the sharks who make dirty deals to retain their power is the reason why they turn evil. Everyone tries to do what they can. They're getting browbeated by their constituents back home. They're not staying in D.C. because they're too busy going home every week for a week or two, and they're not even in the office to do votes. You know, Washington, D.C. used to be a fun place. It used to be a location where individuals who came to Washington, D.C. to represent their state and the constituents within their district They used to do this out of the love of country. They weren't paid thousands of dollars. They were given a per diem, a travel expense per diem, to represent their area of the country. I believe it was back in the 50s. I'm going to have to check, because I just thought about this before I went on the show, and I wasn't able to grab it. You know, but today, the salary of federal congressional representative, Speaker of the House, gets $223,500. Majority and minority leaders get $193,400 salary. Senators and representatives get $174,000. That's what the congressional pay is. The problem is, back in the day, they just got a couple of thousand dollars because they weren't in Washington, D.C. 365 days a year, okay? They were here from September until May. Give a break for the holidays, you know, usually 2 to 3 weeks so that they can go home, do some hobnobbing, hi, how you doing, spend some time with the family, you know, and do things like that, come back in January, and then maybe spring break for a week, and then they would turn around and be here until the end of May. So June, July, and August, because those 3 months in Washington, D.C., are the hottest months of the year, and they would wind up not being in Washington, D.C., and the reason for that is because most of the buildings here in D.C. at that time didn't have air conditioning, and it was sweltering hot. Trust me, be on the mall in Washington, D.C., June, July, or August, you'll know why they left. The heat and the humidity is just stifling, not to mention the fact that you're smelling the swamp gases from around the area, and the smells that are coming off the Potomac or the Anacostia is overpowering. You'll pretty much want to gag and throw up. But people left. They went back to their homes. They went back to their states. And they had 3 months of hobnobbing and dealing with constituents and dealing with people so that they understood what was going on back at the home front. Now, they're here 365 days a year. Well, their office is open 365. Congress is open 365. It's in session majority of the time, because of some stupid thing going on. Because Congress and Senate are overwhelmed with issue upon issue upon issue. Phones are being, the switchboard at the Capitol building is being overwhelmed. Because people just pick up the phone and call anybody on the Hill. Now, first of all, ladies and gentlemen, if you're going to go after an issue, like for me, fighting about Veterans Administration, if my local congressman isn't on that committee, I will write a letter to my local congressman. Or I will go to, I will schedule a meeting to go talk to my local congressman, whether it be in the constituent's office or on the Hill. I have the capability of doing both. Now, if I go to that meeting, I'm going to tell him or ask him to please guide me through the system, if I have no clue. But I do have a clue. What, you know, can I get his support in combating whatever the issue is for the Veterans Administration? If he doesn't happen to be on the committee for VA, the Congressional Committee for Veterans Administration and Veterans Affairs. Now, if he's not on that committee, I'm going to turn around and at least give him a courtesy. Hi, I'm Betty Kilbride. I'm from your district. I just want to let you know that I'm going to go fight like hell to go get a specific issue taken care of. I'm hoping I can get you to back me on this when the representatives on the Hill here who are in that committee or on that committee or even lobbyists going after that committee come to you and say, hey, listen, your constituent is really making a lot of noise. We need to stop her. I want you to be able to have the balls to turn around and stand up and go, she's my constituent. She had the common courtesy to come to me first and tell me what her plan of action was. I guided her. I suggested she go see this one and this one. I stand behind my constituent. This issue is important to people in my district. Therefore, I am going to support her. That's how you do it, ladies and gentlemen. You don't turn around and wind up contacting all 400 and change. 435 to be exact. You don't go after every single one of them and go, you're a freaking idiot. You're an asshole. You're a da-da-da-da. You know, and start throwing out names. No, you start being not politically correct, but you have manners. You have a little bit of etiquette and decorum. You act like a business person. And you show a little bit of respect to their position and their office. You go after them with, you know, a wreath of camaraderie, of peace. I want you to help me. You are my elected official. That's why you're in office. You know, my dad used to always say when I was growing up, no matter what the problem is going on, utilize your elected officials, local, state, and federal. You got a problem? Research it. Know what you're talking about. Fight for it. And then go after those elected officials. On a federal level, you contact your state representative, your congressman or your senator. You don't threaten them. You be professional. And then you go to the other members of a specific committee and you lobby those people. And you try to convince them to your way of thinking. You maybe contact people in other states. Maybe they might have the same problem. And you all gather together as voting citizens. And you go to these people and say, listen, hey, maybe somebody in your group, you know, might throughout the country might be a constituent to that particular chairman of the VA committee. Utilize that person. Get them to help you. That's how you fix one problem at a time. The same thing goes on your local level. You know, you want to fix Washington, D.C. Everybody wants to fix. I want to fix Washington, D.C. But individuals are only one person. Special interest is who gets in there because the money is behind it. This is how you wind up fixing Washington, D.C., ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to give you the number one key. You start at your local level. You fix Washington, D.C. by fixing your local level. I have told people over the years many times, I used to get phone calls in the very beginning, back in 2007, 2008 timeframe. Oh, you know, we got the Tea Party going on here. We need your support. We need you to wind up backing these people. And I'm like, no. People were totally, oh, my God, what are you talking about? I thought you were patriotic. Don't question my patriotism just because of the fact I'm not standing up going, the Tea Party is the number one. I've been in politics well over 30 years. Tea Party is a here and then. Come and go. Anybody turns around and winds up saying that the Tea Party was created in 1992 by a guy in New Jersey or some chick down in Georgia. You're on drugs if you believe that. The Tea Party, the real one, was created in 1774 by individuals by the name of Paul Revere, Hancock, John Adams, John didn't come in until after the fact, you know, but individuals like that, the people that did the dumping of the tea in the Boston Harbor, that was the people that created the Tea Party. Make their voices heard in a strategic way. Those are the people that represented every American citizen. That's the Tea Party that I belong to. The revolutionists back in the 1700s who created this country. That's the Tea Party I belong to. The one today are a bunch of laptop and keyboard, you know, advocates. That's all they are. I was asked many times, well, you know, we have to wind up organizing. We need help with becoming incorporated. And I was like, nah, no. But we have to. In order for us to raise money, no. And after I said that, I mean, there was a meeting of like 10 different people that came up from North Carolina, West Virginia, Virginia came up to see me. They were trying to lobby to get me involved. They wanted me to help lead the area. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to. I'm in politics enough. I don't need to be stopping. But here's what I suggest you do. Don't incorporate. Because if you incorporate, somebody, one person has to be the president. Some one person needs to be the vice president. One person needs to be the treasurer and the secretary. Therefore, you've got four people in control. I disagree with that. What you need to wind up doing is, if you need to raise money and get the word out, go rent a room at a VFW hall, an American Legion, the library. If you get charged $100 to rent that room, here's what you do to raise the money to cover that. Somebody lay it out. You turn around and you put a table up, you put a fishbowl up, you know, or a big giant bucket, and you put a note. This is self-funding meeting. We paid $100 for this room, 100 seats available in the room. Please donate $1 per person. Everybody throws in a buck, you got your $100 covered. Taken care of, right? Common sense. Somebody might turn around and throw $5 in. So you might wind up coming out with $150 or $140. You might even come out with $200. So therefore, the next time, the meeting's already covered. Now, once you get into that room, and this is what I've told people constantly, once you get into that room, you've got 100 people. Take those 100 people, divide them up into groups of 10. You now have 10 groups of 10. You're doing your Common Core math here? I'm being facetious. I'm sorry. I just hate Common Core. Anyway, you got your 10 groups of 10. Out of that 10 group, those 10 people, there is one person that's going to be a PowerPoint wizard. There's going to be at least one writer in the group. There's going to be at least one really good researcher. Therefore, you've got three key people right there. The other seven people, you come up with your local entity issues. Local issues, you know, your local taxes, you know, your local government payroll, problems with the police department, you know, they need apparatus or equipment, whatever, mismanagement of money. You've got seven people to take on seven issues. I recommend all the time, two local, two state, two federal. That's only six, right? Well, guess what? There's always going to be one extra issue in every locale that there's going to need to be three. Or maybe it might be three on the federal level. Who knows? But out of those 10 people, you wind up taking all 10 of them. They go in and they research like there's no tomorrow. Give them 30 days, 30 to 45 days. Come up with the issues. Come back in, you know, in 2 months' time. Have somebody having talking points of those seven issues, detailed talking points, history, you know, the origin, the history, the ramifications, how it's been how it's evolved, how it's hurt, demographics, financials, the whole nine yards. Take each one of those issues, condense it into a 30-minute PowerPoint presentation. Everybody having the same PowerPoint presentation, maybe even an hour, combining everything to begin with. You've got your talking points because somebody wrote them up. Those 10 people are now the experts in those seven issues. They've all got the PowerPoint. They've all got the speaking notes the talking points for them to wind up talking about. You've now got, after 2 months' time, 100 individuals that can go out to civic organizations, to schools, to town hall meetings. They're experts. They have devoured the information. They've read it. They've absorbed it. They've memorized it. They have spoken about it over and over and over and over and over again. There are now 100 experts on those issues. So instead of just having seven issues, you've now got 70 issues, okay? because one group might come up with something that might be different than another group. But guess what? If you've got something, you got 70 different people out there speaking. Each one of those 70 people, you combined all of your issues into one. You combine all of your PowerPoints into one. You're all speaking the same thing. You can span out over the rest of the state. You can hit more ground that way. You can energize the grassroots effort of your local community. Both sides of the aisle, because guess what? Taxes, home, you know, real estate taxes, personal property tax, car tax, you know, your fart tax, you know, your sneeze tax, the payroll of the local government that's sitting on their butt, filing their nails, sitting back in their, you know, in their chair, talking on the phone. Hey, I'm going to do this to her this weekend. You know, that's what happens. You got fat and happies in offices. They're not doing their job. Why are they getting paid $200,000 to $300,000 a year of your tax money, your local money, to sit back, file their nails, read a Playboy magazine, Playgirl magazine, whichever the case may be online on dating sites, you know, trying to have an affair or whatever the case may be, trying to figure out, hey, you know, can I take honey to this place this weekend, and what kind of toys do I need to bring? You know, it always comes down to sex and scandal. You people need to wind up learning how to do things the right way. I mean, this is all common sense, ladies and gentlemen. This is nothing I'm teaching you or telling you that's new, right? I know it's not. I can hear you even through the microphone. I can hear you saying, well, this is nothing new. I've been doing this for years. Well, you might be doing it, but what about your fellow citizen? Are they doing anything? Or are they just going along to be along, to live? And they're complaining at local barbecues, you know, backyard barbecues. Oh, God, I can't believe I just got finished paying $10,000 in real estate taxes. They're killing me. Oh, my God. Case in point, New Jersey. It's, you know, it's not a privilege to live in New Jersey anymore. New Jersey sucks. And the reason I say that is because of the fact that they're being choked. The citizens of New Jersey are being choked. They can't sell their house. People don't want to buy a house in New Jersey. They can't leave New Jersey because they can't sell their house to make any money in order to afford to move away or buy something else. They can't afford to leave because they're just being so chokehold with taxes and fees and, oh, my God almighty, these poor people. You know, you wind up having a small little luxury pool in your backyard. Well, guess what? You're being taxed on that pool. Not just using the water, you're not just getting a large, you know, water bill. You're being taxed on having that pool in your backyard that you work so damn hard for. You want to be able to just come home on a hot summer day and just jump in the pool and just wash away the drudges of the day and just relax and unwind before you have to get into the family dealings again. You can't do that. I'm surprised they don't tax somebody for having a bathtub in New Jersey. You know, it's ridiculous. You have a bathtub in New Jersey, I'm surprised they're not charging you for that. But that's a luxury in its own right. You know, if you have a hot tub, you're being charged extra taxes for that. It's like, my God, are you kidding me? Local pools. They don't even have local pools anymore. And if they do, you got to pay $60 to $100 to get a pool tag for 3 months. Sometimes it's $300 to $500 to get the pool tag. Are you out of your mind? This is ridiculous. But that's the kind of crap that nobody fights for. I mean, I've got a bunch of friends of mine in New Jersey that are fighting every day to try to stop the insanity. Because the state legislator is like running amok. But the state legislator is also running amok in almost every single state, continental U.S., as well as Alaska and Hawaii. Ladies and gentlemen, the way you change policies, the way you change Washington, D.C., is you begin at home, within your own community. Change the issues. Find those 100 people. Educate them. You've now got 100 speakers to talk about the issues. Not somebody that's just flying off the handle going, my God, my real estate taxes are freaking so damn high, I can't afford to live here anymore. excuse me, did you bother to look around your neighborhood? You know, the stores? I've said this on many shows. Drive around your community. Count how many, take pictures of how many abandoned stores you see that are empty. You know, go to your little strip mall. Go to your physical mall. Count the number of stores, the storefronts, that are empty. Take pictures of them. Put together your PowerPoint. Oh, we have a problem, because when every single one of those stores go under, because you're on Amazon and you're on the internet and you're buying everything from across the country because you're trying to push the economy, that's all great and, you know, fine. Fine and granted. The problem is you're destroying the infrastructure of your own local community. That's one of the reasons why your taxes are so damn high. Somebody's got to pay for your infrastructure, and you're being gouged as a result of it. Your local community, your local commerce is being destroyed from within. Because every single store, when you pay sales tax, that sales tax is divided up between state and local tax. That local tax goes into your community coffer, you know, in your county coffer or township. That pays for your fire, police, EMS. That pays for your government workers. You know, if you work locally, if you work for the local government, you know, the township or whatever, you drive 10 minutes down the road, why are you being paid $300,000? Why? Why isn't local community government making sure that the local employees get paid adequate, but not substantially? That's ridiculous, because that salary is being raised by your local taxes. Your fellow citizens, your fellow neighbors are paying your salary. So do your job. Don't just sit back and file your nails that don't do anything. Every minute, every second count in your job, so that the tax dollars that are paying you is well worth that bang for the buck. Now, when you leave your local area, your state level, state legislator within your state capital, they're the ones that wind up coming up with the rules and regulations and the laws that govern your state. They go by your state constitution. Have you ever read your state constitution? Have you ever, ever, ever even known that you have a state constitution? Do you know what the provisions were that were written into that constitution? People scream bloody murder. You know, the state constitution down in Kentucky specifically states man and woman. But yet the woman who screamed bloody murder about giving same-sex marriage licenses was persecuted. She was following the state law. Was it right that she was persecuted by a judge who didn't know or understand the state law, who was going by political correctness and political BS? The state law has not been changed or ratified. Therefore, she was technically in the right legally. Just because something comes out federally, it needs to go through your state legislator in order to be approved, voted on, and ratified. That's the way it works, ladies and gentlemen. The crap comes out of D.C., goes to your local state level. Your local state level discusses it, debates it, talks about it, da-da-da-da-da. Then they take a vote. And if they vote yay, then it gets put to a committee to be created into a new law based on that vote, and then they vote again on the final document. Everybody that screams bloody murder about Planned Parenthood, about D.C., guess what? Go to your state legislators. State legislators can change the crap faster than the federal government. Learn politics, damn it. Learn how the system works. You have more power on the state and local levels than you do on the federal level. You can help your federal legislators if you learn how to deal with the local and state level first. You will make their jobs so much faster, so much easier, and less complex. If only you would learn about the local and state level capability that you, as a state and local citizen, have the power to change. Bottom line, learn politics. I don't mean to be degrading, rude, obnoxious, or anything. I am just so sick and tired of hearing the same question over and over and over again. How do we change Washington, D.C.? You change Washington, D.C. by changing how you, the citizen, the voting citizen, or just the citizen of America, change the way you do business on your local level. Start with your local problems. Make a list. What's the problem? You know, look around your house. What's the problem in your community, in your neighborhood? Sit down and talk to your neighbors. Have a coffee clutch. You know, invite a couple of your neighbors over just to have coffee and cake. You know, you could make a thing of cupcakes, you know, make a thing of banana bread. I don't care. Cup of tea, cup of coffee, it doesn't matter. Invite your neighbors over. Okay, I need to ask you some strategic questions. I don't care what political party you belong to. What five issues are driving you nuts that affect everybody? What issues? Real estate taxes, school taxes. Why are the schools demanding to raise taxes when they refuse to do the homework? Talk about an oxymoron there. To do the homework about getting the federal grants that come out of Congress. Department of Education has millions of dollars of grant money that schools can go after for art supplies, educational supplies, copy paper, copy machine printing, you know, printing ink, chalk. That's if they use chalk. You know, what was it, magic markers, dry erase magic markers, paper, books. Why are the schools not utilizing that? Guess what, ladies and gentlemen? You, the taxpayer, you know, guess what happens to that money when the Department of Education doesn't fulfill the obligation of approving those grants? You know what happens to that money? It goes back to Congress. Whenever you hear, we have found, you know, we're cutting the budget by $10 million. Or $100 million, we're cutting the budget. We have done great things here in Congress and Senate. We are going to cut this in order to save a government shutdown. Do you know where that money comes from, ladies and gentlemen? The grant money that has never been applied for. Department of Education, Department of Commerce, Department of USDA, Rural Development for Farmers, oh, what else is there? Oh, my God. Every single federal agency has money. Department of Justice, because law enforcement agencies aren't filing the paperwork to go after federal funding for special projects to deal with the felony land gang, you know, drugs, MS-13 gang members within your neighborhood, crime prevention. They're not going after that money. Do you know why they're not going after that money? Because it's time-consuming to go through and read a 50-page document, highlight the required prerequisite documentation and information that you need to have in order to wind up getting that grant money, and then producing the documentation package to submit. But guess what? You do this all, I mean, believe me, I've done grant work in the past. When you wind up putting that whole package together. It does take 5 to 6 to 8 months sometimes. But once you put it together, it's the same crap. Next year, the year after, the year after. All you do is go in, you change the dates, you change a couple of little wording here and there, dollar amount maybe. You got awarded X amount of dollars. You know you're going to get that dollar amount. So why not turn around and add another $25,000 to it? Because you realized you didn't calculate in this, this, or that. So add in another $25,000 or $30,000. Or maybe $50,000. Or even $100,000. Who knows? The money is there. They have to legally give that money out to schools that qualify. Why aren't the school administrators doing that? You know why? They're lazy. Oh, I don't want to have to read a 50-page document. I don't want to have to put this stuff together. Oh, God almighty, I'm so overwhelmed already. I don't want to deal with this. And oh, nobody on my staff knows how to do this. Oh, forget it. We'll just raise taxes. It's a lot easier. And guess what? You can lower your taxes real fast just by filing for that money. Go to the Department of Commerce. Go to the Department of Education and go look up their money. There's millions of dollars sitting there in that pocket. And you can go back to 5 years. You could file the same grant paperwork for the previous 5 years and get a boatload of cash for your school. Teachers want to do it, but the hierarchy in the school refused to allow them to do it because that would require them to do it next year. They don't see the beauty of teachers or even parents. Parents want to do this, but the school refuses to allow them to do it because they won't give them the information. They won't give them the budget because guess what? If parents start looking at that budget and went, whoa, we got a problem. Why are these salaries being paid when teachers aren't getting paid that much? School administrators don't do a hell of a lot compared to a teacher. And the teacher is getting a lower salary. The teacher is out there buying her own supplies. Trust me, I've interviewed a lot of teachers. They buy their own supplies. Oh, they'll spend $100 on supplies to teach their children because they're dedicated instructors. The problem is the school only gives them a $25 reimbursement check. So that's $75 out of their paycheck. That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. These teachers don't get paid that much, but they're required to do so much more than an administrator does. And a lot of these administrators, they were teachers first. So why aren't they doing everything they can to help support their school? They're not. Parents have to pay $50 here, $100 there. Teachers come up with these crazy, stupid trips to France and Italy and Germany and China. And the parents are supposed to fork out $4,000 or $5,000 additional to ensure that their kid is allowed to go on this trip. I remember going on trips back in school. We were lucky if they were $50. That covered 3 days, food, transportation, the whole nine yards. We didn't go to Europe. I would have loved to have gone if they did it. But, you know, I don't understand the problem with this. Why are they doing this? Oh, they want to be able to do a trip underneath the school dime. I digress. You know, I go off on, because I am just so livid at the administrators of schools because they're deterring from learning. They're not even giving these kids books anymore, physical books to carry. They're all doing online. Guess what? When a kid is online, it's very easy to have 3 or 4 windows open. Oh, they're reading cartoons. They're watching videos. Oh, I'm just listening to a video. I'm just listening to the music. I'm not watching it. Really? Come on. Weren't you a kid once, parent? You know the kid's doing. You know the kid's not reading a damn thing. Unless you go in and physically read the book and then ask them questions, you ain't never going to know if whether or not they're really reading the book. But anyway, back to changing D.C. That's how you change D.C., ladies and gentlemen. You start at the grassroots. You start local and state. You can do more, ladies and gentlemen, on the state level than anything happening in Washington, D.C. If on a state level you start lobbying your state legislators to change the system, because guess what? They're a little bit more organized. They are more comprehensive in their meetings. They don't have 50,000 committees. They make things happen a lot faster. And if we can turn, if you want to stop Planned Parenthood, guess what? Go to your state legislator in every single state. Every state. If every state goes, every constituent goes to the state legislator and demands for the defunding of state funding to Planned Parenthood, there's your first stab into the financial longevity of Planned Parenthood. Because after they've lost the funding in all 50 states, that's if you win all 50 states, Congress is going to turn around and go, all 50 states have just voted quickly to pass legislation to defund Planned Parenthood on a state level. Once that's done, then you've got power to go to the federal level and go to your local congressman and go, now that we've got the state level and all 50 states cut off, what are you going to do about it? Now we need to wind up defunding them on a federal level. If we get them, if we get you to defund on a federal level, they're gone. State level can wind up doing defunding probably in 30 days. Look at what happened down in Louisiana. Mississippi, done. Texas, done. What other states have already decided to defund? Those are the only three that I've heard of. Every other state can do the same thing. But it's up to you, ladies and gentlemen. Make it happen. Make it happen on a local level, on a state level. That's how you begin to change the federal level. Because the federal level, as we all know, they have to wind up having the bill be produced, and then they have to go get, you know, co-sponsors. That takes a while because everybody's busy, and then they got to wind up going to the floor and, you know, introducing it. And then they have to wind up discussing it. Then they have to wind up putting it into a, they have to form a committee in order to, didn't anybody ever watch, what was that show, Locomotion or whatever the heck it was, you know, how to form a committee. It's a thing having to do with school, back in when we were kids. I'm looking at the stupid thing. I got the rhyme in my head. I'll think about it and probably post it up later on. As soon as the show is over and done with, that's when I'll remember it. It has to go into a committee, and then the committee has to discuss it, and that could take 6 months. And then it's got to come out of committee, go back to the floor, and then they have to discuss it again. And if they don't vote, and then they might have to go on a vote. And if they don't, once they vote on it, then it's got to go back into committee to be rewritten in order for it to be redone, in order for it to be sent up to Senate, and then they have to wind up introducing it on Senate because there's got to be a co-sponsor on that side. They have to have the same type of legislation document. They got to bring it up. I mean, it's a pain in the butt. That's why it takes so damn long. What the Founding Fathers did in 10 years without electronics, without the motor car, without the internet, without fax machines and phones, without everything being right next door and, you know, a train ride away or a plane ride away, Washington, D.C. can't do in 10 years. They can't even do it in 10 minutes. You would think with all of this technology that they could get things done a lot faster and quicker than the Founding Fathers did. Oh, hell no. It takes longer because they're bogged down. So like I said, you want to change Washington, D.C., you want to change how things are done here in D.C., make their lives so much easier by literally working the local level, the state level. Because if you do that, I'm telling you, you'll see things being changed a lot faster, a lot quicker, and a lot simpler. But unfortunately, no one's going to listen to me. You know why? Because I'm just one average American who loves this country enough to take the time to do my homework. That's why I don't talk a lot on social media lately. I'm doing way too much research. My research is comprehensive. You know, and when I have people turn around and wind up, you know, leaving me nasty gram messages telling me, "Oh, you don't have a clue what you're talking about. You know, vote. You don't have any idea of what you're talking about." Really? You didn't bother to read the original statement. You didn't read the post that I put up on my Facebook page. You know, by the way, ethics violations are illegal. Anyone who does an ethics violation, you know, breaking an ethic, especially when you're an elected official, that is illegal. You don't have to wind up going to jail. If that was the case, three quarters of Congress and Senate and their staffers would be in jail if it actually was a federal offense or if it was jail time. No lie, ladies and gentlemen, three quarters of them. There's always an ethics problem. Sometimes it's, you know, "Oh, God, I didn't realize that." You know, if somebody brings it to your attention. But when you're cocky and you're obnoxious, "Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know I was doing that. I just thought I was signing documents. I had no idea my staffers were doing that." No, you're the elected official. The buck stops with you. If your staffer, if your staff is totally off the cuff and they're out in left field doing their own thing while you're out doing personal vendettas, guess what? They're going to lose their job. You're going to get thrown out. And that's what happened to Newt Gingrich. There's a number of other ones in this city who have been thrown out for ethics cases. Unfortunately, the Democratic side, nothing ever happens unless something really, really, really seriously happens. You know, Schumer and the other ones, they all had ethic violations, but it was only one or two. Newt Gingrich had 84 when it was all said and done. That's what got him thrown out. That's his conviction, Jason. 84. It wasn't just one or two. 84 infractions. Ethics violations. Unethical individual. Come to Washington, D.C. I'll give you a real good civics lesson and give you a good tour of Washington, D.C.'s capital. You want to scream bloody murder about Washington, D.C., people? Come to Washington, D.C. Spend time here. See how it works. Go visit your congressman or your senator. Go see how the staff is running. Go see what goes on. Don't just sit behind your laptop and play armchair political strategist, because unfortunately, you don't have a clue what's going on. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm coming down to the wire here, and I'm being told to shut up. For all those out there wearing the uniform of the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, Merchant Marines, every day you put your uniform on, you make this humble American proud to be an American, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart for what you do, for how you sacrifice, and how you represent me and America around the world in that uniform. For those who are in hot LZs, potential hot spots around the world, thoughts and prayers are always with you. You've always got my ear. You've always got my voice and this mouth to stand up for you and fight for you. For all those out there wanting to change America, start at your local level. That's all I ask. Learn it. Fix it. Move forward. That's the lesson for today, ladies and gentlemen. Learn civics. Learn the local government. Get involved. Talk to your neighbors. Find out the issues. And then attack them. Make them fixed. Make them get fixed. Make your legislators fix everything. God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless the founding fathers who gave us the freedom that we can talk without having people shut us down. Respect each other. Have a good day, ladies and gentlemen. See you all next week. You're listening to Assignment America Radio Show. I'm your host, Betty Kilbride.